That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hi there, and welcome to Grief is My Superpower. I'm Mark Lemon, award-winning children's author, bereavement ambassador, and your host for this podcast. Each week, I'll be interviewing incredible people that get open and honest about their own experience with grief. When I was 12 years old, my dad was murdered, and my life changed forever. I try to explore with my guests if it's possible to live a happy and fulfilled life after the death of a loved one. You can find me as The Dad Author on Instagram and at the Lemon Drop Books website. For this episode, I've travelled to Cheltenham to speak with Helen Dukes from Disco Kids and her 12-year-old daughter, Lottie. Helen and Lottie speak to me about the death of their partner and father, Aid. You can find Helen at the Disco Kids website and on Instagram as Disco Kids. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave a comment wherever you are listening to this podcast. By doing this, it will help us to reach more people in need of support at a tough time. This podcast is in support of children's bereavement charity, Winston's Wish. Okay, so today I have travelled to Cheltenham again for this episode, and I am meeting someone who I have connected with via Instagram, and she is also affiliated with the charity Winston's Wish, who this this podcast is for, and it's Helen Dukes, founder of Disco Kids. But we also have a very special guest here as well, and it's Lottie, her daughter. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
We're good.
You're good?
Yeah. Strange having an interview in my mum's living room.
Well, you know, as is every interview, it's in a different location. It's a different format. And I think that's the great thing about
this
podcast.
Yeah, thank you, mum.
So thank you so much for being a part of this today and sharing your story with me. I guess for the listeners, are you able to just tell everyone who you are and what you do, all of that stuff?
Please? Okay, yep. As you say, I run a small business called Disco Kids. I have a partner called Chris, and my daughter Lottie is 12 and Anya is 5. Going back to the business, we produce music-inspired designs on what we started off with, kids' T-shirts, and now ladies, and we do prints too. So that's it in a nutshell.
No, and they're amazing. And we see them everywhere on Instagram and social media. And Otis and Thea love them themselves.
Good.
Leading on from that, are you able to share what your experience is with grief, please?
Okay. So we go back to, I just finished maternity leave and was going back into a new job, actually, in IKEA. And Lottie would have been about, you're about just coming up to one. And I think when she turned, just before she turned one, Aid had been to the doctors because he had a lump under his arm. And they sort of sent him to get it checked quite urgently. And it turned out to be melanoma cancer. And we're looking at stage 4, which anyone that knows cancer, there is no stage 5, so it's a terminal cancer. And I guess the next 2 years were quite life-changing for us, yeah. Lots of chemo, radiotherapy, and to try and get away the cancer, we had lots of surgery. Fortunately, just the company I'd just joined had Bupa for all their employees, all of the managers, I should say. And as much as the National Health were amazing, having Bupa meant some of the operations with some of the same surgeons, etc., were just immediate. So things like brain surgery were just kind of the next week. And being with IKEA, I was able to have lots of time off work to help care for Aid. And a friend that I met around the same time, actually near the end, before he died, had had literally no time to take off work because of her situation with her job. So I just felt very lucky to have joined this company, and they were able to give me so much time off.
Well, it was great they were able to do that for you, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So how long was the process from, you know, finding out to when he actually died? You know, was it?
I think it was quite immediate, I think. And I think he knew as well. When Lottie was little, he'd taken out sort of an insurance critical illness cover. We'd done it quite, just when I think back, it wasn't not long before he'd found this lump. So whether he was just, or we were just doing that anyway, because, you know, when you have kids. But it moved very quickly. Because we're talking 8 or 9 years ago, a lot, you kind of erase that stuff a little bit as well. So the early stages, you know, I remember all the positive stuff, like the support we got from friends, how amazing the National Health were. I remember Tuesdays going into for chemo that, what's the program where they go around houses and there's two presenters and he's hilarious, but they always put music to the...
Homes Under the Hammer.
Oh, that's it. So whenever I watch Homes Under the Hammer, Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, I think it used to be on, and it would always be on in the hospital when we went in. But I don't know why am I telling you that?
Because those are the things, aren't they, that when you're trying to remember and think back to a time, that they pop in your head. Yeah.
Exactly. And he fought it hard. Literally, I think it was over 2 years until, you know,
Right.
And the doctors kind of always get it right near the end as well, when, you know, how long he had to live. He was in the hospice for about 2 weeks because, again, he just fought it, but making us laugh to the absolute end. Literally the day he passed away, he had us laughing. He was just a very loved person, and lots of people that, you know, came to see him when they knew his, you know, near the end. But my main concern as well as him was just making sure that Lottie was getting the right support, prep, sort of almost. I just went into overdrive of taking photos and trying to build up a picture of him for her, knowing that she was so young that she might not remember a lot.
Lottie was, what, three and a half?
It's kind of just
quite a tough time.
It was. But so much support from everyone around us. We'd actually moved, Aid and I had moved to the sort of the country, but over in Nuneaton, where all our friends were in Birmingham, and friends would drive over with food parcels and had made sort of sushi and all sorts for us and bring it over for Aid and come and spend days looking after us and him. And, you know, it really was a very supportive time for all of us. Yeah,
that sounds amazing that you were supported so well, you know. And I know that a lot of people have said that, you know, sometimes when someone's died and then after it, you know, the support can maybe peter off a bit. Was it still there for a little while? Your friends are so good.
Right. It does definitely. Everyone is there. It's almost overwhelming, isn't it? There's so many people that want to help, and there's some people that don't know how to help or what to do, but there's some friends that were just very good at organising things and making sure we were okay. And then we took the decision to, because we were living over there, Lottie and I, we went for the holiday of a lifetime to Australia just before we moved back to Birmingham, because Lottie hadn't started school at that point. And I was just, again, looking forward to where she'd be at school, what support I would have. And I've got a very good friend, Kira, that had realised that Lottie and her son were the same age and they would be at school together. So we moved quite near them. So she really helped out with things like just school runs and bringing a bottle of wine round, because when you're a single mum, anyone that's in that situation, just the smallest things are really hard to do.
I've heard the smallest little things, like you're saying, the food parcels, and you know, you appreciate it
exactly
a lot, don't you?
A kind of
and I guess, you know, Lottie, did Do you remember that period at all? Or because, it, you know, being 3 and a half, I'm guessing those memories might be.
I kind of feel like when I was 3, I didn't really understand what was going on. And I think I knew that Daddy had gone, but I didn't understand how. I didn't really have any emotion or anything. So like at his funeral, I didn't cry because I didn't understand. I think I pretended to cry because everyone else was crying. And I thought, wait, why is everyone crying? Am I supposed to be doing this? And I think then as I got older, my emotions kind of kicked in, but I didn't really know what they were. So I kind of like have little tantrums sometimes and like get angry for no reason, when really it was probably just that I was kind of angry because I didn't understand how I was feeling and I couldn't really control my emotions.
Sorry.
I was going to say, hard for, because I did take so many pictures and we've got video clips. I think sometimes you see those and it helps you. Maybe you wouldn't have remembered those situations if I hadn't taken those clips, but because you've seen them, you kind of almost reminds you and gives you a memory, even if she didn't have one. So my work of all the movie clips, and which back then, because there was no, well, social media was just kicking in. Instagram, I think, hadn't even begun. So yeah, it was, I literally was taking photos constantly.
Oh, that's fantastic that you did that, isn't it?
And, yeah, so pleased.
And I guess, you know, leading maybe onto the whole support, in terms of, did you look for support immediately from a charity, or was it short, you know, a little while after?
Yeah, another friend that didn't have a very good work situation when she lost her partner, another friend from school I found out had been through a similar situation. Her partner had died, and she was the one that told me about Winston's Wish, because she'd found them. And oh my God, the amount of help from their website back then, of things like memory boxes, and just, and the fact I, you know, taking photos, creating a picture for Lottie in the future of what aid was like. Also, we gave out cards at aid's funeral, that we just wanted friends and family to write down memories about him, funny memories, because he was, there were so many. So Lottie's got them in her memory box.
So they're in the box as well.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's nice. Yeah.
Because, you know, my memory's crap. I can't, there's lots of things I don't remember. So, you know, it's great to have those just to recall situations. And again, the photos of, and there's some, you know, when Lottie's old enough, I'll tell her some stories about the post-club parties and things. But he was a real, yeah, he was a real gem and a real funny person.
But those little messages, they're really important, you know, for you to read and sort of see how appreciated he was by his friends and his family. I think that's a really nice thing to have.
Yeah. And what else have you got to remind you? Because you've...
Yeah, I think I have his sweatshirt and his glasses and his aftershave, and just I have like a memory box with loads of pictures of him that remind me of how he was as a person, because I didn't really know him, and well, obviously I knew who he was, but like I can't remember him very well. And then I think when I had my counselling, I was helped and I made a sweet box, which was kind of like a toolbox thing, which I use when I'm sad about Daddy, and I just think of. And in there, there's like memories that make me happy instead of feeling sad about him, and just reminding myself of the happy times instead of getting down on the sad times or the fact that he's no longer with me.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro. Easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
How have you found the last couple of years, Lottie? I know, sorry to direct the questions always at you, but it's just quite, I think it's quite interesting because, you know, like we've mentioned, and this conversation is for Winston's Wish, the charity, and, you know, we hope that there are some young children like yourself listening. So, how have you found the last couple of years, you know, as you have started to really think about, you know, the memory of your dad and you say it upsets you sometimes, but it's also nice to remember the happy times.
I think I got to an age where I kind of understood what was going on. I think from the age of like 7 to like maybe 10, I'd have these stages where I was like really sad. And like at school, I'd get really sensitive to things. And like anything to do with death, I'd get really sad about things. And like, I think as the years gone, I've learned like how to control my emotions and like just think of happy things instead of like cry. But sometimes just having a good cry is like a good thing. Like just get out your emotions. And afterwards, I feel kind of like refreshed. Like I've cried. I'm fine now. Everything's okay. Yeah. Like,
That's an important message, and you know, because I think a lot of children, even adults, feel it's quite hard to cry sometimes and just let your emotions out. And I think that's a really important message, you know. Yeah,
definitely. I think again, going back to just trying to do everything for Lottie back then, I had counselling, she had counselling as well. Again, probably recommended by Winston's Wish. And at the time, it was very basic with Lottie. It was more about understanding what death is. Not so much the emotions that go with that. And it was, like you say, lots just a few years ago when I could just see there was a lot of anger coming out. And I think I, again, rang Winston's Wish, and they said at kind of 9, 10, it almost comes back again because you are starting to feel the emotions on things. And we went back and had some counselling again. And it was great, wasn't it? Because you really learnt how to deal with the emotion and when you're angry. And some friends at school that wouldn't know how to be with you, and just understanding that not everybody knows what to say, do they? It's really quite difficult for some people if they've not been through it. I think once you know grief, you know that it is important to talk, and you know it is important to ring that person or say something rather than to not and think that they don't need to be bothered.
I think it's important, isn't it, for your friends to understand how you're feeling as well, isn't it, and how to approach it, because a lot of, you know, and I remember being back when I was 12, you know, and I lost my dad. It's your friends struggle to understand how to approach and talk to you about it. You know, some are better than others, but I think these days, because of charities like Winston's Wish, there's more information, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And the thing with the school and getting it onto the curriculum, which I'm sure you will talk about, just is so important. You know, we schools should be about preparing kids for, I don't know, whether it's knowing about pensions or grief, or it's so important to equip them for the future, because everyone is going to die and people are going to have situations like Lottie. And do you want to talk about the situation you had with at school?
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the school element of, you know, support and how you found it.
Well, when I was, I think, 9, we were doing an RE lesson, and I think this was a time where I was very sensitive to anything to do with death. Like, the word death, I didn't like blood or anything. It just made me very uncomfortable. And I think we were doing an RE lesson. I think there was something to do with like a coffin or something, and I started crying. And the teacher that I had was like not a supply teacher, but she was a teacher that we didn't have very often. And she said to me, "You're not supposed. You can't. You have no reason to cry. My daughter lost her dad. She doesn't cry all the time." And I remember feeling very annoyed at this teacher, and she just showed no like sensitivity to how I was feeling. And then we were asked to do a piece of work where we had to do like a good world and a bad world. And instead of doing like a world with animals and like happiness and like then like a world with like rubbish and stuff like and like climate change, instead I did a world where my daddy was alive and he was talking to me, and then alive, and then a world where he was in a coffin and there was no medicine. And then I think, didn't you say that my teacher rang you? And
this was the first year where I didn't actually go to the teacher, that Lottie's new teacher, to say, "Look, this is our situation." I felt that, you know, she'd been at the school long enough for them to know and to communicate. And it's the one year where they didn't. And so I had a call saying, your daughter's drawn a picture of a coffin, and we'd like you to come in. And once Lottie had told me the reason, and, you know, I could totally see. And obviously this woman had been through the same situation, but maybe she was feeling a bit, had the anger.
Yeah, I almost felt like she was taking her anger out, or like her sadness out on me, because I was crying, and like some, I don't know, like something to do with her daughter or something.
Mm. But having said that, there was a lot of good. There was a teacher that was looking out for you at the school, and it was the only one incident out of the whole, but it just, you know, it just does take that one incident, doesn't it? And it sticks for you. But
I think that's an important lesson for schools, isn't it? I think maybe they think that it's just a year, 2 years, and then the child has moved on, you know, and maybe they just need to be conscious. And it's about sort of having like a regular checkup,
with
the child throughout their period of, you know, schooling or wherever they are.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, you dealt with it really well by the seams of it. So moving on to Disco Kids and the reason why you wanted to set up Disco Kids, and obviously, you know, a big force around Disco Kids is working with Winston's Wish and raising awareness for Winston's
Definitely.
Wish.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted to give back to them in some way, by having some of the t-shirts where we donate part of the profits to them. And then it's, you know, there's other charities as well that are close to home too that we've included t-shirts. But the reason, starting Disco Kids was really Chris, my partner, who I met a few years after Ada died. I think talking about grieving, I was grieving from that day that Ada was diagnosed, you know, so Lottie and I had different sort of levels of where we were at. But so, yeah, when I met Chris, he was a graphic designer, web designer, and he gave me, he was the one that came up with the idea to sort of do it. And he did the design work. I'd had my background in music and retail. And it just, I'm so passionate about it, you wouldn't believe. But I do think deep down, I feel I am so passionate about it. One of the reasons is that my career kind of stopped when I started caring for Ada, because that was the most important thing back then. And it's only now where I really feel I'm back to where I was. And, you know, I'm driven. I like to achieve. And it's just great. I'm just so happy it's doing well and that people support us too. And the fact that we can support Winston's Wish in turn as well. So, yeah.
I think it's kind of a nice story, isn't it? Because you have obviously gone through what you've gone through, and then, you know, and it happens not just because people are grieving these days, but because they feel in a bit of a rut. What am I going to do? You know, I'm going to start my own business. And that's the power of online, isn't it?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Setting up your business you have and it being successful like it is.
Yeah.
So it's a great story.
Yeah.
So moving on to, you know, after the death of Ada, do you think it's kind of changed your outlook on life and the way that you view, every day?
Yeah, just the cliche of life is too short. And, you know, I know when I died, it brought a lot of friends together that had maybe not seen each other, or there was friends that had fallen out. It literally was just, you could just see it made everyone realize it was the first person, I guess, that we'd lost in our friendship group circle and of our age. So a bit of a wake-up call to life and how old we all are and how young you can be when something like that happens. So
definitely sort of wakes you up a bit, doesn't
it? And just that, to make memories, to do things and just, hold those memories, take lots of photos and just have a laugh in life, because that's what Ada always did. And, to do the same.
Yeah, no, that's...
See the positives.
That's definitely the great message. So, a question for both of you, really, but we're kind of, you know, to talk about schools, and we've talked about it briefly already, but, you know, there is this big taboo and stigma still around grief and talking about death in the UK, I feel. Lottie, what do you think we could maybe do in schools to maybe be better about talking about grief and, you know, approaching a difficult subject with children of your age?
I think maybe not in primary school, because I feel like it'd kind of be hard to teach in primary school, because if people were young, they might not really understand it. Maybe in secondary school, they could just have like a lesson maybe each year that's just about grief and like how to talk to people that have lost someone close to them, instead of just, because I feel like some of the people at school don't really understand how to talk to me. They kind of just say like, oh, it's okay, but like it's really not okay. They just kind of think, they kind of treat it as if like I'm just sad about something, like, I don't know, like falling over in the playground or something, but it's not that really. It's like it's something bigger than that, but they don't really understand. So like I feel like if they had a lesson, or like just like one like small lesson just about how to talk to people and understand how people are feeling, instead of just like talking to them as if they're just upset like a normal person.
Yeah, but also I think starting younger, because you had that situation, you were needing it back then, so probably just very basic and appropriate to the age of the child, definitely. And I think it's with education, it'll be the generation, if those kids, it's like recycling, etc. You know, the kids now will do it, whereas some people our age just don't get it because they've been taught something at that age. It's instilled in them. So if we can do that with grief and talking about it, and some of the people that maybe just don't want to talk about it will change that outlook because they've
changed the mindset.
Yeah, changed the mindset. Exactly.
And I mean, yeah, I've said it before in other interviews, you know, it's that kind of grief isn't really perceived as a mental health. But if you don't approach it at a young age, you don't talk about it, and you don't open up, then later on in life, you're going to, you know, like you were saying about the generation, perhaps, you know, of those that have maybe not talked about it, you know, 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Bottle it all up and stiff up a lip. And,
exactly, they bottle it up. And then later on in life, it's going to hit them like, you know, bang. And they're going to find themselves having to go and speak to someone about it. And so I think, really important what you just said about children having that space to be able to go and share their feelings.
Definitely. And just them knowing that people are looking out for them. And sometimes it's just a hug and, I understand, or that we know what you're going through, and take some time out. And
like, I have one friend who is like really supportive, and like, I think once I cried in a lesson, like actually quite recently, we were watching The Lion King. Really stupid film, but it's just like, it always gets to me because like the dad dies and everything. And I was crying and my friend was like, oh, do you want to go out? Do you want me to tell the teacher? She was very like supportive. Like she almost like she knew what to say, even though she hadn't been through it. It's almost like she just knew what to do. Like she's like, oh, do you want to go out? It's okay, Lottie. You can just look away. It's fine. And then almost like, but then there's like some people that just that they don't really know what to say. So they kind of just leave it and they don't really say anything. And they kind of just let you cry, which sometimes isn't the best thing.
Yeah, that's quite it can be quite a hard thing to know how to approach somebody, but you know, sometimes it is just an arm around your shoulder, or you know, or a hug. It doesn't have to be words. I think that's really important. So moving on to I always like to add a question of three things. So if you're having a sad day, and I know, you know, delving into your memory box is always I'm sure it always helps you, but if you had like three things that make you feel happier on a sad day that remind you of Aid and your dad, are there things that you could think of?
Just for me or lots or both?
Yeah, we'll go.
Yeah, either. Okay. For me, well, back when I was really sort of in the thick of grief, as it were, I know music totally sort of kept me going, and finding new music, listening to old music, listening to music that Aid liked, and almost making myself cry. I think there was a record that I always thought, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to listen to this. It was like our record. And I thought, I can't listen to this record ever again. But it came on, I think the first time it came on the radio, and I thought, I'm welling up now. But I didn't cry. And it was like, oh my God, I thought I was going to it was going to get me. But Shed 7, Disco Down. And so I can listen. Sometimes it will make me cry now.
Well, I was speaking to Sarah Turner, and she was saying it's like her grief anthem, you know.
Yeah,
and it was Coldplay for her.
Right,
but
okay.
For anyone that's like you just said, you know.
Yeah, a moment of, when he was in the hospice, a friend had got, well, no, it was Lauren Laverne's partner that Aid knew. He'd come to see Aid. And I said, "Oh, Graham, can you get Lauren to play a record for us?" I'm going to, and she played Disco Down. Yeah. Sort of, I think she had a morning show then, and we literally, just it was a real moment back then, and so music. He was always really into his music, and so music. There's many records that do remind us, and he wanted Johnny Cash, Ring of Fire played at the funeral, and I did actually ask the vicar if that would be appropriate, but he said, no, I don't think we can do that.
But maybe not today.
I did ask the question. There's lots, and Here Comes the Sun is obviously a key track. Now, he loved the Beatles, that was his favourite. When he died, it was played at the funeral, and it was weird. We have a get together every year. Last year we'd gone to this bar, and I do believe in signs and music. You know, something will come on. Anyway, this guy was just doing this acoustic stuff all afternoon, Coldplay probably and all sorts. just as we were leaving and wrapping up, suddenly he started playing Here Comes the Sun. And I was like, oh, my God. Just thinking somebody got him to play it. So I literally had to go over and say, oh, did somebody ask you to play this? And he said, no, why? So that just threw me even more, because of all the records he could have played, tracks he could have played. So, yeah, music is a good way to bring happy memories, and also just sad memories, reminders. There's lots
of... It's a mixed bag of emotions,
music
isn't
is
it?
The answer. It definitely, really is in so many ways. So, yeah. Lottie?
I think the song that, like, talking about music, a song that always reminds me of Daddy is, I remember, well, I don't remember, I think there's pictures, or there might not be, when Daddy was in the hospice, I think I was dancing to Fight for This Love by Cheryl Cole, and that song literally always makes me cry, because it just reminds me of dancing.
I think it was the first record he put on the iPod for you, and it would always come on at the most inappropriate time. So I was trying to be cool with...
Yeah, and yeah, and that was like my favourite song, so that always, like, that song always, like,
so that reminds
hits me
you.
Hard.
Yeah. Yeah, they can be very tough. And that actually, leading on, there is a question here from the children at Winston's Wish, you know, which actually leads me nicely onto mm-hmm. those questions. So, yeah, for this section of each interview, we have four questions from the children at Winston's Wish that they would like me to ask you. So the first one is, how do you make yourself feel happy when you're feeling sad?
As I said, I look at pictures of Daddy and think of happy things. Kind of what I've already said. Think of happy things. Like, sometimes, usually music, sometimes it makes me sad and sometimes it makes me happy. But I think pictures is the main thing. And, like, I'll be in some moods where, like, pictures, like, make me sad and, like, they make me think, oh, why don't I remember? But then sometimes looking at them makes me think of, like, the happy things that happened, instead of being sad that Daddy's not there.
For me, yeah, just seeing people and talking to people, if I'm feeling or if I was, it doesn't in that grief moment again back then after he died, just connecting with people, ringing people up, which doesn't happen so much now either, does it? I mean, I'd imagine...
Just send them a DM.
Yeah, well, but that, and even that sometimes is... If ever I see somebody's lost somebody on social media, even if I don't know them, just that knowing, sending a message, and...
It means a lot, doesn't it?
It means so much, Mark, yeah. And back then, anyone that people would call me and I would call people, I'd sit there with a glass of wine and just have a chat, and I felt... I really wanted to be close to AIDS friends, and I just had my sister actually got together with AIDS best friend, AIDS best friends, Spencer. So I see a hell of a lot of him, thank goodness, and we can talk about AIDS, and he can share memories with Lottie. So that was great that we can sort of talk about the memories, and there's so many funny stories about AIDS. So whenever I need to be reminded,
well, it's great for you, Lottie, that you've got these people around you that can, you know, can tell you about, you know, these lovely things about your dad. Okay, so I was going to lead on to question two, but we spoke about music. The question is, what piece of music reminds you of AIDS? But I guess we just touched on
that. Yeah, there's loads, though. Loads. Yeah, there is so many that things come on. He loved the Doves as well. Really, he was always...
Oasis.
And I always remember... Most of us used to DJ at this club, Wobble, back in the day, and, you know, all buying new music. But it was AIDS was the one that discovered the Streets before everyone else, and everyone was like, "Oh yeah, God, they're
cool." Wow.
Yeah, yeah. He, and also always the first to get technology, and, you know, the new phone, next iPad, iPod. So, and so much music. A lot of stuff on my iTunes is stuff that he'd bought. I've still got all his CDs so that I can pass them on to Lottie. And well, but to remind me again, because my memory is so rubbish, of all the music that he bought and that we bought together. I worked in a record shop again back then when we kind of got together. So I'd come home literally with 50 quid's worth of CDs every week that he'd found and wanted, or I'd bought. So music in our house, the percentage of space taken up from vinyl and CDs
is probably the biggest thing for you, isn't
it?
Yeah, in terms
totally.
Of remembering
it's from people that, you know, knew AIDS and met him in Wobble probably, or how they got to know him. It's big big part of our history.
Yeah. Okay, so the next one is, how do you think your grief has shaped you?
I think just, yeah, made me a lot stronger as a person, definitely stronger. Not worry about things so much. I used to... you worry more. And, yeah, just knowing what, if somebody else is going through what I've been through, knowing what to do, I guess, and wanting to, I mean, I was even thinking, God, I do come to Cheltenham, not as often as I used to, but I should offer my help to the charity, because once you've been through something, it's the natural thing to do is to want to help other people with the same. And yeah, I think it's just made me understand a lot more what...
It's given you a strength.
Yeah, definitely.
That maybe you didn't have before.
Yeah. Lottie, do you want to answer that one? Or?
About how it shaped me. Well, I feel I've kind of done the opposite. I'm a worrier. I'm very, like, kind of sensitive and quite... I think when I was little, I was very shy. And I think I've kind of grown out of that shyness now. It's almost like I was shy because I didn't really want to, like, show everyone...
You hated being in front of people.
Yeah.
That she had this thing about not wanting people to look at her.
I didn't want people looking at her.
Yeah. And whether that was just from, you know, everyone, I relate back to the funeral maybe, because everyone would have been looking at you or talking to you, and all that attention back then maybe is quite... It's not normal for a child to get all
of the... I can completely empathise with you. And like I said, being 12 years old and when it happened to me, and just the feeling of being a bit different, you know, and people looking at you and you just being aware, but maybe them not saying anything to you, you know. So I completely understand you saying that. Yeah, definitely. Mm. Okay, so the next question is, and we've talked about it a little bit, but what do you do to remember Aid and your dad on the important days, like his birthday and other days across the year? You know,
okay. Do you want to talk about what you...
I've talked about, you know, recently I've talked about Father's Day quite a lot, because Father's Day wasn't long ago. But, you know, for people like you and I, and, you know, who've lost fathers, it's quite a tricky time of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, like at school, whenever we do like Father's Day activities, or like when I used to go to brownies and stuff, like it'll always be that time of the year. It's almost like, oh, like, do I make one for daddy? Do I make one for grandpa? Do I make one for Chrissy or something? Because, like, it's almost like I wanted to make one for everyone, because I almost, like, I didn't really know, because do I make one for daddy even though he's not here? And, like... And, like, every year on his birthday, we paint his stone to remember him. And I also have, like, this sand jar with, like, memories in it. But, like, Father's Day, I feel like it's very difficult, because, like, I want to celebrate Chrissy as my stepdad, but then it's also remembering Daddy as my actual dad, and, like, even though he's not here anymore.
Yeah, well, I think that's, you know, something that we can also mention as well. You know, Chris is obviously a big part of your life. And you know, I'm sure he's wonderful towards yourself, and you know, it's probably a tricky dynamic for a lot of young people who are in a similar situation, and so I think by, you know, mentioning Chris in this podcast is very important to him.
Yeah, absolutely. And also we can look back, and it's a funny story. But when I first got together with Chris, obviously... Well, do you want to explain, Lottie? There was an incident where there was some paint found in some shoes. Well, some, I think they might have been some new trainers. And I was like, why is there this paint in these shoes? And it turned out, it's kind of Lottie's anger, I guess, not wanting... Well, you were kind of...
I wanted you to myself.
I wanted you to myself. She'd
so
had
they were
me.
Chris's shoes.
They were Chris's shoes, sorry, yeah. And the anger had come out in paint. So there was like these two sort of like... swirls of paint in the shoes. But I get that, and he gets that now, that, you know, she had me for two and a half years, just me and her, and then this new person comes along, and it's really hard. Again, anyone that's going through that, you think it's, oh, it'd be fine, you know, new unit and it'll be fine, but it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
It really does, and you have to be patient. And I think Chris was actually the one that realized this more than I was, like, no, come on. And it doesn't happen overnight. It takes time for the respect.
Yeah, you can't just walk in and get like the respect, or like not respect.
Yeah, you both need to,
from the child.
Yeah, it's that time spent with each other, and the new family unit being made. And Aid was, and the conversation we had before he died, he wanted me to carry on and, you know, live my life. So again, a really hard thing to go through. So, you know, when I did meet somebody new, and I knew it wasn't going to be an easy ride, but we're getting there, we're there, aren't we? And
I think it's really important that we just spoke about that, because again, like we said, there's many people out there who are going through a similar situation.
Definitely.
And especially from Lottie's viewpoint, you know, again, it's your opinion in terms of, well, your outlook on that. So
again, going back, that I had those two years where my grieving process started when he was ill. Lottie's, well,
I feel like I was grieving when, like, Chris was there. It's almost like when Chris had come in, I'd almost realised that Daddy wasn't there. I was thinking, who is this new person? What's he doing? And then I think I'd get, like, angry a lot, because I was almost like, I wanted Mummy to myself because I was grieving and I needed her attention, but she was having to share it with Chris.
Yeah, and then along comes Anya. And that's another... No, but you... and Nelly. But, yeah, so we've been through all those times and you get through it, but, yeah, it is being aware of how everyone's feeling. And it's everyone, because each person... Anya's obviously going to be jealous if I'm spending time with Lottie and she's not, so... It's just communicating and knowing how everyone's feeling, I guess.
I mean, it takes time, doesn't it?
It does,
Like anything, you know. Yeah. And it's never easy, and it goes in waves, and it comes back again, as we always say, in terms of grief.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's been an amazing chat, and I really appreciate you guys.
Oh, and it's really good to meet you finally.
Having me in Cheltenham, and also it's been incredible to have Lottie's viewpoint on this podcast, because it's the first time that we've had someone of your age on the podcast, and I think it's really important for any children out there, young people listening, to hear that, and also obviously yours from a parent's perspective, Helen.
No, she literally, we were chatting last week. And with Mum, and she just said, "Oh, can I be involved?" And I kind of—it's just the whole like at the funeral. Should you just think children shouldn't come to funerals? But it's a case of, does the child want to do this? So she wanted to come. So here she is, and I'm really glad she came. I'm very proud of her, and Aid would be too.
No, I'm sure he's very, very proud of you. So, guys, thank you so much. As I always say, grief is individual, it's personal, and I really appreciate you sharing your story with me today. So thank you so much.